welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. I'm very excited for today's episode, as we're going to dive into the future of the Army Sustainment University. Every logistician is very familiar with ASU, from officers starting their careers here in Bullock and then the career course, warrant officers attending the Technical Logistics College, and then NCOs in the Logistics Academy. But there is so much more that is offered here, and is truly where logistic leaders are forged. To guide us today through the future of ASU, I have here with me today the Commandant, Colonel Steve Erickson. He commissioned in 1996 in the Armor Branch after graduating from North Georgia College. In 1998, as part of the Branch Detail Program, he transitioned to the Quartermaster Corps, followed by the Logistics Corps. He previously served as the Logistics Plans Operations Division's Chief, Directorate of Logistics and Engineering, J4, at the headquarters of NORAD and NORTHCOM at Pearson Space Force Base, Colorado, where he was responsible for the planning and coordination of logistic requirements in support of Homeland Defense, defense support of civil authorities, security cooperation, and emerging Arctic missions. His assignments histories include platoon leader, brigade maintenance officer, forward support company commander for 1/8 cab, instructor time for Bullock and the career course, lieutenant colonel assignment officer and career coach at HRC, the 215th BSB commander, logistics branch chief at HRC, and the 3rd ID sustainment brigade commander. And for a full bio on his amazing career, you can check it out on the ASU webpage. I'm so happy to have you here with me today, sir. Welcome to the show.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I really look forward to our conversation today and sharing some of what we've got going on at Army Sustainment University and really kind of what we've been doing for all these years.
Awesome. Well, let's dive on in. And the first thing we're kind of hit today is, well, first of all, what is the Army Sustainment University for some listeners that might not even know what this university is?
Right. So the Army Sustainment University is the institution for sustainment education and training in the United States Army. We're located here at Fort Gregg Adams, and we are responsible for developing, delivering sustainment-related courses, training, and education to Army and Joint and civilian personnel. Really from the initial military training, the Bullock and Warrant Officer Bullock basic courses, all the way up through senior leader development through our Army Sustainment Pre-Command course. For our older listeners out there, or those who may not be wearing the uniform anymore, I mean, we go back to like 1969, where we were the Army Logistics Institution turned into the Army Logistics Management College. As the Army Sustainment University, what makes us a little bit different in the past is we're on a Somerville campus here at Gregg Adams as part of CASCOM, and we overwatch and oversee the instruction for sustainment logistics lieutenants, captains, warrant officers, NCOs, and civilians alike.
So I know I was walking through this hall as having been a student here myself, having done instructor time here. It's just amazing to see, especially seeing it's changed in my almost 9 years of career so far. One thing I always find is, like, especially our partnerships with the international students, that is a great opportunity from when I was in Bullock, being able to work with, I remember in my class, I can't remember exactly which nation they were from, but in Africa. And then when I was here as a student having internationals, and then especially as an instructor, it was always great working with them. Can you elaborate some more on our partnerships with the international students?
Yeah, sure. So we've got an international student office. And what's interesting, the way we run it here is every international student comes through our office, whether they are part of the captain's course, the Bullock basic officer leaders course, or if they are an NCO warrant officer and they're going directly all the way down to one of the other functional branches, quartermaster, TC, or ordnance. But we bring them in, sit side by side the American students, and we go through and we cover, you know, the technical, the tactical. We look at sustainment doctrine, tactics, techniques, procedures, and we look at where we are and where we aren't interoperable, and we share both directions, right? Mm-hmm. We learn from them almost as much as they learn from us, and they clearly do a better job, I would tell you, because they've got to do it in a different language. So we've definitely got the upper hand in that piece.
Yeah, with the international students, I know when as an instructor, I had an amazing time working with the international students, especially the ones who, as you said, sir, can accomplish this in another language. Because I think to myself, would I be able to do this same instruction in another language? I'm like, the abilities to learn in a language that's not your primary is amazing. And I've continuously watched the integration of our international partners with the U.S. students. And it's really kind of helped build those bonds. And especially as we continue to forge these leaders, it helps really as they go out into the force, having built these partnerships with them, it helps them. So when they are out doing joint operations with another nation, it's like, I've already had the experience working with somebody else. And then even a cooler thing was like, hey, we're out in Atlantic Resolve, and I'm working with the student that I was in school with from Lithuania or something. And it's like, wow, we were in school together. Now we're out doing operations together. Wouldn't that be a cool experience?
No, it absolutely is. And I tell you, it enhances, you know, the personal relationships, the country relationships, and probably for another podcast for somebody from AMC potentially, yeah. Right? It helps our overall supply chain management and our readiness for our country, right? So a lot of these countries, they purchase, buy, or we work with them to hand off U.S. Yeah, equipment and materiel, right? And if, you know, they've got tanks or they've got Strikers or they've got JLTVs, for example, they're going to put a need and a demand on the supply chain. And that helps our industrial base to stay kitted up and keep producing repair parts and things like that, so that when the need comes, whether it's us, our partners, the supply chain, the industrial base can keep up. And then more importantly, when you're out at other locations and you're doing cooperative and integrated mission sets and things like that, we can support each other, which is pretty powerful as well.
And I think that's a great segue, sir. It's like, how does the Army Sustainment University, like, how does it fully fit into the enterprise, sustainment enterprise as a whole? I mean, it's a great segment for that.
Yeah. So one of the things that we really focus on is, you know, at the schoolhouse, it's really tactical operations. It's where the rubber meets the road. It's where the soldier, the leader is going to execute tactical sustainment. But we're just part of the greater supply chain. We're just part of the greater military operation, right? So as we go into, you know, the doctrine, the tactics, techniques, and procedures, we also really get into, you know, how do we fit into the multi-domain operation? How do we fit into other branches, other services? How do we fit to the overall supply chain management? And there's a lot going on in terms of how do we get depot level maintenance all the way forward. So we talk about those things. We teach about those things. So when our captains, our majors, you know, and our lieutenants in some cases and sergeants are on the ground and they find themselves stuck with a problem of how do I solve this sustainment, this logistics, this supply kind of problem, they've got an understanding of end-to-end sustainment and supply chain management and how they fit into the greater piece so they can then either do it themselves or they know who to connect to get that additional support, whether it's from AMC, from the depot level using telemaintenance, or they send a forward support representative, an FSR or logistics assistance representative, a LAR, to be co-located with a tactical maintenance operation. They can do depot level for maintenance, for example, you know, on the battlefield today. So understanding from end to end, you know, from the foxhole all the way to the forge, if you will, where we start to put our material together to make the supply parts that we need. It's important to understand all of that, and I think that's how we tie in to the execution, the ultimate execution of that operation.
And I think that's a great way of like how ASU is adapting for the future. There are so many different things happening. One thing that we're going to talk about in one of our next episodes is the changes to lieutenants with Bullock. And it's just amazing, like I just talked about, how we're supporting the enterprise and we're able to adapt the curriculum and adapt how we're doing instruction for the changing times. You know, we had spent so much time with counterinsurgency operations. I remember when I went through here as lieutenant during Bullock, of course, that was always the focus. We're focused on COIN, and watching now as an instructor now going through and watching the change into large scale combat operations. And it kind of goes into like, how are we changing? Like, how is this? The landscape now is we're focused more on division centric, large scale combat operations. So how is ASU now adapting to this new chapter?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you know, large-scale combat operations is nothing new. And if anyone spends enough time in government service working in the military, they're going to find that the good ideas have a way of coming back. So 29 years ago as a second lieutenant, and then as I transitioned to sustainment and logistics as a company XO running around doing those things, and even as a Ford Support Company commander, we did what we call decisive action, and that is essentially large scale combat operations. If you go back and you consider, you know, in how to picture the battlefield on a slide or on a sheet of paper or on a big whiteboard, it's easiest to picture it in a linear fashion, and that's what large scale combat operations is. It's going toe to toe with an adversary. In this case, a near-peer adversary. We've got two of them out there. And it starts with understanding what are their techniques and procedures and what are ours. And then how do we get, you know, as sustainers, sustainment support, logistics support, you fill in the blank, right, at the point of need. And what makes large-scale combat operations so much different from COIN is we're no longer operating in a sanctuary. We don't return back to forward operating bases where we've got, you know, stores, stockpiles, and caches of food, munitions, and class three and things like that. We are doing it on the move. We are doing it with less because we are often disaggregated because of the indirect and direct threat of our enemy. And we are putting our sustainers and our maintainers at the point of friction. I remember when we went to COIN. And it's kind of the way you just described going to LISCO. It's nothing new, but it's a mindset change, and we really got to take into account, you know, all the sustainment principles and all the functions, because in this one, large scale combat operations, I think General Milley, when he was the chief of staff, actually said, you know, when things get really bad on the first day, you know, we're not losing, you know, 9 service members in a firefight. We're losing a battalion potentially in a indirect attack from our enemy. So that's what makes that so huge and why it's so important. And really, to answer the question that you asked, how are we incorporating this? You know, we are looking at current threats. We're looking at the linear battlefield, but we're also looking at our opportunities and where things are hard. So we're looking at the Indo-Pacific right now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, good ideas that come back, right? So back in 1940-something in World War II, we were island hopping. And what made that so hard is we didn't have bases, and we're getting there. Well, today we have some bases, but the distance is the same. It is unchanged.
The Allies didn't move.
The island, well, maybe some of them moved, but they probably didn't move much, right? And what's interesting on that, and we've got our team looking at, you know, how do we execute large-scale combat operations in the Indo-Pacific? The tactical level, it's going to look about the same to the platoon who's on the island doing things. But the sustainment considerations and implications are tactical sustainment and tactical operations are going to be so linked to operational strategic mobility that if you don't understand the end-to-end operation, the supply chain, you know, concepts and how things are connected, we are going to have a tough time doing it. So we've got our first captain's career course. I forget the number off the top of my head, but they have just kicked off a couple weeks ago, and they're going from start to finish, looking at decisive actions, large scale combat operations, specifically to the Indo-Pacific. And when they do their capstone project, we're going to see how well they do on that, because it's a tough one to beat. The one in the European theater was tough. Mm. This one's going to be even more difficult. So.
I know the team did an amazing job putting that together. watching some of my peers really sink in on the Indo-PACOM, because I know from me starting my career back in 2012 until now, it's all it's been is coin. It's always been an Atropia. We're always in Atropia. We're always doing that type of train exercises back from 2012 until when I was a career course, even just recently. So it is I look at it as a nice refresher to see
it is
a new operation in a different environment. And then kind of like what you talked about, sir, is like, well, we just got to dust off the books. Like, yep, with this stuff, we've done this. You said World War II, like, that was huge for the Pacific.
That's right. If you go back to World War II, that's, yeah, most historians will tell you that was the first multi-domain battle. We integrated air, land, and sea. In today's battles, multi-domain means so much more. We got cyber. We've got the electromagnetic spectrum. We've got air isn't just fast movers or helicopters or drones. There's so much. So if you really want to peel it back, and you said it, so we go back and dust off the old things, the TTPs don't change. We've got to look at how do we execute our technical experience, our technical expertise, if you will, in a tactical environment. And if you can't stay alive, if you don't understand counter UAS and counter drone kind of things, you may not survive long enough to execute your sustainment mission. So we're looking at, you know, camouflage techniques. How do you hide? How do you break up the big brigade support area or the big alpha company supply and support, you know, supply and service company? You know, they're ginormous,
yeah,
and they're a target. So how do we break those out? You push food here? Do you push the SSA over here? You know, and then how do you communicate? And then with that electromagnetic spectrum, it'll be even more difficult, right? Because you've got jamming. You know, we've fallen very comfortable in using our GPS systems.
Very comfortable with all technology.
Yep. I mean, if we don't know how to use a map and protractor and know how to, you know, figure out and do the math from grid to magnetic and magnetic to grid and know where true north is and understand time and distance and navigate without technology, we're going to struggle. Because I tell you, a lot of our adversaries, they have much less, you know, quality technology than we do. I bet they're pretty good at doing land navigation while mounted without their GPS as well as they are with. And we've got to be able to match them, you know, when we have our technology working and when we don't. So,
and I think the great thing with the university, you know, as it continues to do, is we're changing into Indo-PACOM. We're changing into more large-scale operation. Is getting that information out to the force, because now we're getting lieutenants, we're getting captains, we're getting warrant officers and NCOs that are coming through the university, getting this new knowledge, because we are getting to a point where I can almost see that we have such a large generation of people who only know COIN, who only know, you know, the Middle East, or only know counterinsurgency, and now they have to change that mindset.
That's right.
Large-scale combat operations, and you're going to have that tension.
Yes, yes, and to your point, you know, COIN, so we've been doing it that way. Our instructors are heavy COIN, they got it down. They understand large scale, but not everybody's done it, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we communicate that? I mean, I can go talk to a class and explain it, because, yeah, I did it as a lieutenant, as a captain. I did COIN as a major and as a lieutenant colonel, and then I started doing large scale combat operations again all the way until now. But I can't teach every lieutenant, right? As much fun as that would be, I would love to get paid to do that at my current grade. But some of the ways that we're sharing that information, you know, through small group discussion, but we're really incorporating things like we've got VR goggles that we're using in bullet classes, so that we can create a virtual large scale combat operation environment that they can see and understand. So when I say, hey, the BSA is too big, they don't even know what a BSA is. They've never been in a BSA. They've been cadets and high school students in the last 10 years. So we can show them, hey, this is how big a BSA is. It takes up a grid square. And now we break it apart. We get disaggregated. We go into base clusters. And now they can say, oh, now I get it. We've got drones that we use for our bullet classes. And it does two things. It allows them, when they're in the field, to practice the hide and the deception piece and survivability of being spotted by the enemy. But we also are taking those same drones and pictures, and we're able to show the lieutenants from above what they look like. So when they're all screwed up because they're pointing the wrong direction or they're just too big, we can say, hey, look, here's some sustainment considerations from a safety survivability perspective. And here's some from, you know, hey, let's just talk about how do you run a good operation to be efficient and effective while conducting your technical task in the tactical environment. So we're doing that to help them see themselves as well. So we're looking forward to getting more of that. We're on the infancy side of you, if you will. We've only got probably 50 or less VR goggles, but our goal is to get enough to outfit an entire class of about 150 lieutenants, for example.
That is amazing. That's looking back, I could go back in time, almost 8-9 years before I can go back to Bullock just to experience that, which is a great kind of segue into what kind of changes and improvements are coming to NSU that you can speak on.
Yeah, so those are the biggest ones, right? The Indo-PACOM piece, the LISCO piece, the integration of exportable technology, right? So we talked the VR goggles a little bit. We have drones that we're using. We're partnered with the technology team in CASCOM also to develop tools that when our lieutenants and captains go back and sergeants and warrant officers go back out to the field, that they've got a reach back capability. So the Army Resource Portal, Sustainment Resource Portal that we have has baked in, built in classes on how to run an arms room, how to run a supply room. If you log in using your CAC enabled credentials, there are classes and pieces that show everything from wiring diagrams and troubleshooting techniques for Strikers or Patriot missile systems, even to how to use the new squad rifle system, and they break them out. So there's a lot of capability that we're bringing through technology without getting true hands-on, that we can get hands-on, virtually or digitally for all of our students, and really to take that out to the field. So when they're doing sergeant's time training or they're doing just any opportunity training, they can rely on some of that and speed up some of their learning curves, if you will.
That is amazing, sir. Just to see the way that we've integrated technology into the learning environment and just the way it's bettering the overall force. It's just an amazing opportunity that seeing where it's been, where I started till now, it's like night and day. Kind of gets into so how can we, as a sustainment community, how can we better prepare? How can we better the overall force or contribute to it?
Yeah, so I think first is you got to realize that as the community, it's not just TRADOC, right? So many people have heard the three pillars of education, from the Army perspective. It's the institutional here at TRADOC, at CASCOM. We do some great training and we send people out, but we've got a small period of time. So the next piece is you got to get out there and you got to do the job. You got to do some OJT, on the job training and experience, and put into practice these kinds of things. But then there's also the self-development and continuous training that has to take place. The community out in the field has a responsibility to train soldiers and train individual collective tasks and things like that. And that ranges from sergeant's time training to we're doing a collective training density in preparation for the National Training Center or a deployment to Poland or a deployment to fill in the blank. So we got to understand that first. In all my years that I've been doing this, the one thing that I've always seen is our sustainers are great at what they do. And our mechanics are great doing mechanic stuff. But too often do our leaders keep them in the maintenance bays and in the motor pools turning wrenches, which is hugely important. But they don't do it in a tactical environment. So what we've got to do more is integrate our technical experience and expertise in a tactical environment. So every opportunity to transload fuel or issue fuel or class one or water or to do services, take it to the field. Meet your customer out at a grid point. Don't use your GPS to get there and do transload operations, maybe in limited visibility under night vision devices, right? We need to be better at integrating the technical into the tactical. So I'd start with that. The other thing, a couple other things I just say is, understand the principles of logistics, understand the tenets of Army operations. While they are different, they overlay really good, right? So, what sustainers have to do is they've got to be proactive and anticipate the needs of their customers. We're going to get better and faster with that with large language models, with AI and big data. But those, being proactive and anticipatory, those have been, you know, tenets or principles for the last 29 years. So it shouldn't be a surprise that, you know, a tank or a, you know, a striker battalion is going to need fuel. We should know when they're going to need fuel. We don't need big data to do that. So we can start leaning forward and doing some of that and stay ahead of operational requirements. And to that, I would tell you, if you're a sustainer and you're an XO or you're an S4 or you're a support operations officer, or if you're a commander, when your customer, when the maneuver support or your supported customer, the maneuver force, right, is doing planning and you're not invited, you should take personal offense to that. Mm-hmm. And you should invite yourself to that.
To show them.
Meaning, to show up. To show. Because they're going to talk about what they're going to do, but they can't do it without sustainment support. And the earlier you are in the conversation, the better you can be at being proactive and anticipatory and integrated and synchronized, right? It's one thing to integrate, you know, the technical into the tactical, but if you truly synchronize it in terms of a battle rhythm where, you know, LRP operations are tied to, you know, resupply operations at the BSB level are tied to resupply levels from or operations from the DSSB, and you can walk it all the way back. And that's really our role is to do that for them. So don't let sustainment ever not be an operation, right? Another tip.
That's a great point, especially for the captains coming out of here, right before they get into company command. That's a great point. Is like you are as a company commander, like you have you make those opportunities, as you said, like just go out, reserve some land, and just go out there and say, hey, this week we're doing services out here.
That's right.
So just, and it's just simple things like that, and it gets, it sets and reps.
It is. It's you know, you hear it all the time from the old sergeants major, right? We got to do blocking and tackling better. Well, if you can't block, you know, it's my team are the Kansas City Chiefs, and they could not block Philadelphia.
Oh, no, I love you.
And Patrick Mahomes was on his butt so much, and they lost. But if we can't do the simple things, if we can't get to the fight, you know, it's not going to get done. You know, when I commanded, I would always often use this as an example to people, and it was really about C2, but you can apply it to just about anything. And it goes something kind of like this. If you can talk, you can fight, right? So if I can communicate with my subordinate leaders, then they can execute operations. So if you can talk, you can fight. And if you can fight, you can win. But if you can't do the basics, you'll never get to the fight. And if you can't fight, you'll never win. So, you know, consider those things. And then, you know, the last piece I'd really tie is to our listeners out there. If you're listening, that's the first step. But it stay tied to a continuous learning and developing yourself as a professional. Read often, understand doctrine, learn the new doctrine. Techniques and procedures won't change a lot, but terminology will. And you've got to be current, because I promise you, our maneuver brothers and sisters out there, they're talking current doctrine. If you walk into a room, especially if you're self-invited, and you don't, you can't communicate clearly to them, you know, task and purpose and how you can integrate and synchronize into their operation, then they're not going to see you as value. So be value added.
So I think that's a good way to sell it, kind of to our last point, sir, is in your 29 years of experience, like what final good advice do you have for those serving in the sustainment enterprise?
But one, know that oftentimes sustainment and logistics is, I don't want to say marginalized, but it's a secondary thought, right? Because we got to think, you know, when I say we, the maneuver force thinks about what are the effects they need to achieve. We've got to stay nested with them so that we can, you know, be part of the operation, because, you know, logistics will not win a war, but I promise you they can cause one to fail, right? So keep that in the back of your minds, right? Be synchronized at echelon, be integrated every chance you can be. And just know that if you're not disciplined in your day-to-day tasks, if your soldiers can't execute their technical in a tactical environment, then we're not a whole lot of help to our customer. Know that we've got to be creative, and that doctrine is just a starting point, you know, of how we're going to do it and when we're going to do it and who's going to do it. But if the mission changes or the environment changes, be flexible and be adaptive. work well with each other. Sustainers got to stick together.
Oh, yes.
And you've got to become sometimes best friends with our maneuver counterparts. You know, with the S4s, the XOs, and commander-to-commander dialogue is important. Again, because it's all linked through discipline and synchronization to be integrated. And then lastly is, you know, take care of your people. Train them properly. Get the sweat and blood, you know. Understand risk, of course, you know, risk to force, risk to mission, but train hard in garrison so we don't have a hard day out in a combat environment.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic opportunity, meeting here today with you, sir, and just the great conversations that we've had, just being able to analyze truly the future of Army Sustainment University, to see the direction that it's going, seeing where, especially all this new technology that we're using. Part of me is like, man, just go back and experience some of the Bullock, all the fun they're having. But just the way that we're integrating, as we said, dusting off the old books.
That's right.
And that we've had on the shelf, it's, you know, dusting them off and just applying them into today's world as we're getting that division-centric, large-scale combat operation. So that's been just a great way to analyze it. So I do want to thank you, sir, for coming in today and just providing that great insight to our listeners. It's just amazing to see and hear about all these innovations. It's going to really prepare the next generation of logistics leaders. So, and I look forward to continuing to work with you.
Hey, I appreciate inviting me on, and I look forward to maybe doing this again. There's probably more I could have talked about. I've got some notes, and I promise you there's more I could have talked about. So I look forward to the next opportunity, and I too am looking forward to the announcement of some of the officer changes that we've got coming up in the Log Corps.
Yep. So, yes, we'll be on the lookout for one of the following episodes as we talk about the changes to the Bullock program here with the lieutenants. But that is all we have today, folks. I hope you've enjoyed our discussions. Be lookout once again for more episodes dropping every 2 weeks. Sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.